Welcome to the Godspeed Institute, an enlightening and positive forum exploring all the world's religions and spiritual belief systems as an on-air classroom. In an effort to help people better understand each other, promote tolerance, and foster peace. I'm your host, Care Hallenbeck. Did creation arise in a distant Big Bang and come toward us? Or did creation instead arise from the one mind and come from us? Philip Meriton is the host of the internet radio show Conversations Beyond Science and Religion, a program about breaking through the common beliefs and perceptions that control how we think about the world. He is also the author of The Heaven at the End of Science, a book about the need to change our materialistic worldview of modern science to create a world of science and of spirit. Philip, welcome to the program, and thank you so much for being with us today.
It's great to be here. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Now, first of all, let's dig right in here. What inspired you to write this book? Could you share a little bit about this question that you have been exploring for some time now?
Well, I think all of us at some point of our lives have these questions that we do not verbalize, which is, what is it all about? Is there a way to make sense of everything? Is there a meaning to the world? Where do we come from? Where are we going? And I had this this desire, this curiosity at a young age, and so I studied philosophy in undergraduate school, and it turned out that that when I started reading the great philosophers, particularly the Western idealists and the British empiricists, I found that they were onto something that had not been completely articulated, which is that the world is easier explained as a product of mind than it is as a product of matter. And so my book, The Heaven at the End of Science, is really a college paper written about 30 times over. So it's the longest running, I got it incomplete in the class, but I finally finished it.
Oh, that's okay, right? Because,
right.
I mean, in philosophy, they say there are no wrong answers. So I'm good. That's great. And congratulations on the book. Now, your book is beginning, let's say, with what is called Science Great Assumption, and that's capitalized. According to you, could you please share with us what is science's great assumption, and where did it come from?
Okay, science's great assumption is, in my book, and this is what other people would say as well. I'm not the only one that has identified this, but the great assumption is that there is an independent world of matter outside of the mind that operates beyond its control and on its own power. Okay, this is the world of the Big Bang. This is what modern science is based about. Another way to look at it is that science imposes models upon the physical world in an attempt to understand the world. And the current model of science is that, as I said, there's a world independent of human perception. And this is actually the assumption that Einstein made back in the pre-quantum theory period. And it's also the assumption that if you read between the lines of a lot of modern science books, most of the leading science writers will identify that the fact that they are assuming a independent world. The problem with this assumption, when you think about it, is that once you separate mind from matter and you make that clean break, there is no way for the matter to be intelligent. There's no way to explain the laws of nature, the order in the universe. There's no way to explain the connection between us and the world. There is no way to explain the paranormal, spirituality. So the great assumption leads to a lot of problems. And so that is what the great assumption is.
Thank you very much, Philip. And it sounds as though perhaps that's a bit more of a struggle for us in the West. Whereas perhaps in other cultures or societies, it might have been seen that mind fuels matter, as it were. They're not quite so separate like that, or we don't remove ourselves so much from creation, that there's something here where we kind of take ourselves out of the picture when we're exploring science and trying to make sense of things, as you said earlier. So now when we talk about science focusing on matter, on stuff, we're talking also beyond the Big Bang into things like as a dark matter, atoms, you know, building blocks and things of that nature. Has that steered us wrong?
Well, yes, yes. I think at the end of the day, the big test for, I think, our modern era is whether we should live our lives and determine our future upon a worldview in which it is assumed that matter is independent of mind. Now, it turns out that modern science itself has disproved the independent world model through the quantum theory. And there's other features of our modern world that disprove the independent world assumption. But quantum theory itself assumes and in fact leads to the conclusion that there is a connection between consciousness and the world. So it is true that from the Eastern mindset, from the Hindu and the Buddhist backings, that it's easier to understand that there is a connection between mind and matter, and in fact there's most of Eastern religion or Eastern philosophy is idealist in nature, where the mind is preeminent over matter, and in fact where the external world in some of these teachings is an illusion. But it's not as if the modern mind or the modern Western mind has ignored that. We're just taking the long way around. That's my feeling about it, is that quantum theory, and then when you add in the fact that modern science is having a real hard time explaining such things as a fine-tuning of the universe. Mm. They're having a really hard time explaining where did matter come from, where are the laws of nature. We're starting to see more and more writers connecting consciousness with the independent world.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much for that, because as you said, when you're struggling with these things or exploring them and how to find meaning and purpose, you know, which we do, where did we come from? I love the Carl Sagan story that we are star stuff, that we come from, you know, everything in us and around us is coming from basically the deaths of stars. And when they die, they create all these new elements, including everything that builds our own cells. So over time, we are deeply connected to what is occurring in the science that we're investigating.
Yeah,
we put ourselves back into it.
Yeah, you see, I guess I'm a bit more radical. I think that the Carl Sagan story, which is and which most people have heard, which is that we're stardust, or put differently, put in a less poetic fashion, we are residue from the Big Bang, and our molecules came from this random explosion in the distant past. I think the problem is that we tend to confuse the metaphors. I mean, Carl Sagan, there's no doubt that he was making a metaphor. What I'm saying is that we are connected to the universe. We are part of a united whole. But the world burst from the internal parts of the one mind, which I call God, and therefore we're connected from the inside out. The outside world did not create us any more than a story creates the author.
Yes, if we shift our focus then instead, and we turn away from the stuff, are we then heading toward the state of mind of the dreamers? And then are we the ones creating this?
The answer is yes. The answer is that, and we could tell this in two different stories. And we
go
can
ahead,
also
we have time.
Right. And we can also tell it from a what-if perspective. We could ask the question, what if the world is really a dream? I mean, that's another way to approach the same thing. But if you look at, if we replace the textbooks today that are out there advocating materialism, if we replace them with textbooks advocating the scientific fact, if it's proven, that we are all part of a united mind, the one mind of God, then there's no doubt that our efforts will then be to focus our attention on making a better world for everybody, which means education, feeding people, sheltering the poor, breaking down bridges between different religions. And so it really is a change in perspective. Instead of looking out in the world for the answers, we look inside of us for the answers. And another way to put it would be that instead of assuming that the world we live in is on autopilot, that it's running on its own power, we are at the controls. But we do this together.
Now, there's the saying that life is what you make it, and over the years I've added death is also what you make it, and heaven is what you make it. Can you share a little bit then about this heaven at the end of science and delve a little more deeply into the subject of this mind, this one mind of dreamers? Because I'm trying to get a gist of whether you're saying that we are creating the reality of this universe.
Well, the beauty of the dream motif is that it has a place for religion and science in it. What I'm saying is that if you view the history of our world as the history of God coming to understand itself, which is also spoken about in some Western idealist philosophers, but if you view it as an evolving dream as opposed to a outgrowth of the Big Bang, then we see the mind gradually starting to understand itself. And by the mind, I mean the mind of God. As it understands itself and realizes that only it is at the controls, it will necessarily want to paint a better picture, want to write a story with a happier ending. And so what I'm saying is that the thought in all of our minds, the highest thought we have, is of the thought of heaven, of a better world. And so if we change that perspective, we start seeing that we center our efforts at a common goal, a common dream that puts everybody on the same page. We row this longboat in the same direction. We don't scatter to the four winds with our different belief systems.
Well, yes, in some ways you're preaching to the choir here at the Godspeed Institute about all these things.
Yeah.
But I thank you for sharing on these things that are so critical and important at this time. And I mean, they've always been important in history, but we seem to be, because perhaps of our technology and the ability to communicate so much more instantaneously and worldwide, today it's almost palpable, the need to respond to the tensions in the world, whether they be economical or environmental or, you know, relationship oriented, that there's almost a calling out there that maybe is not being named, but that we need to be responding to. And I think what you're talking about this this better world that we need to get on the same page about is at the core of that. Now, do you think it's possible to, you know, for the dreamers to get on the same page, or is this the thing that's evolving?
Well, it's absolutely evolving, and I think that there's really no difference between saying the dreamers get on the same page and saying the people get on the same page. What we need, and what my book argues for, is that we need a unifying principle for all people. What is one thing that we could all agree about? And we're having a very hard time as a civilization figuring out what we agree about. Most people would say, well, they agree about the law of gravity, or they agree about the laws of science. What I'm saying is that if we put the belief and the understanding of the power of the mind to dream a world on the same priority level as the law of gravity, there is nothing stopping us.
Right.
Okay? There's nothing stopping us. And the problem is that we tend to package these ideas and put them off to the side and think that they're some kind of odd thoughts. But if we put science and its belief systems and its theories under the microscope, we find that they are flawed, and that explaining the world as a dream, as a story told by the one mind of God to itself, we start explaining everything, or at least we start explaining more. And so what I'm saying is that this is a natural process of evolution of consciousness of the mind, and it doesn't have to be real fancy. Another way to put it is we grow up.
Right.
We grow up and we take responsibility. That's without getting, you know, too, how can I put this, too mystical about it.
Right.
I'm talking about something in the real world.
Yes. Yes, and I find that one of the unifying principles that unites us is a very simple one, which is, you know, love of family is one.
Right.
And it's one that's no different for someone on the other side of the world, regardless of background or tradition. It seems to be a place where we understand what that means and what it means to others. And it calls us to conscience.
Right.
I think. Now, Philip, where how did you come to this? I mean, tell us a little about your journey from, you know, the guy in the philosophy class over these years.
Right.
How did you come to this idea and this framework of perception?
Well, most people probably have not read a lot of philosophy, but believe it or not, there are quite a few great thinkers, such as George Berkeley, who they named Berkeley University after, David Hume, Immanuel Kant, Hegel, Schilling, Fichte, whatever his name is, who thought the same thing. Berkeley is the one that said that essentially that the world is a dream in the mind of God. This is essentially what Berkeley said, based upon evaluating how we get our ideas about the world. He said that we only have ideas about the world. We can never prove a world independent of the mind.
Right.
Which is the same thing that David Hume said. David Hume said that is true, but the common person takes that world for granted. We do not want to give up our hold on that independent world. Okay. So the only difference is that I have essentially updated Berkeley. And I've tried to compare taking Berkeley to its logical conclusion, compare it against the scientific worldview. I also want to say something very important with regard to Descartes, the I think I therefore I am guy.
Yeah.
He said that when he was in his meditations, he imagined that he could doubt everything, including that the world was really out there beyond his mind. He said the world might be a dream, but then he said, "Well, God wouldn't misguide me into thinking a real world really existed unless there was one." Hmm. And what I'm saying is that Descartes was right, but the God that he referred to was at the united core of being. Hmm. And so all I've done is take some of these unfinished thoughts from the great thinkers, and I've updated it, and then compared the conclusions you reach against the conclusions that modern materialistic science advocates.
Mm.
So it's really more of an evolution or a development of a whole lot of people that have gone down the same path.
Yes, thank you so much for that as well. You know, what comes to mind to me as you're speaking, sometimes we encounter philosophy and not necessarily from philosophers.
Yeah.
There's a favorite book of mine called Illusions by Richard Bach, and he explains in one simple line, 7 billion people, 7 billion different worlds.
Yeah.
That basically we are each in our own reality. And I enjoy that. I think imagination also plays a big part in this, in terms of inspiring this kind of investigation.
Yeah.
Now, in your book, I want to have a little quote here that says, "Under the worldview of scientific materialism, the universe and all living things are nothing but collections of mindless particles and impersonal forces. This worldview brings us the Big Bang, Darwinian evolution, the God delusion, and the heat death of the universe. Operating invisibly behind the scenes, it determines our outlook toward the world, other people, and God. I'd like to get a little more into this now for our listeners, that this worldview, which is not only materialistic in terms of science, but of course becomes materialistic in terms of our living, our
yep.
daily living, as people rejoice at the newest version of an iPod, hmm. and we focus on these bits and pieces of matter.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit more now about how this helps, how this determines our outlook, this materialistic or scientific perception of things toward the world, other people, and God.
Well, it's ingrained in our heads that the secrets to the universe are outside of us. For example, the Large Hadron Collider in Switzerland and France.
Yeah.
They're searching for God in a particle.
Yes.
Okay, the God particle. They're searching for dark matter out in the invisible spaces of the galaxies. They're searching for dark energy out among the universe. We're looking for secrets outside of us. And this causes us to treat other people as perhaps different robotic vehicles, as robots on a game board, for example. We don't see that there is a unity between people. If we reach the thought that the world is a unity, or that the other person is part of us, it's usually through religion, such as the New Testament, or it's through spirituality, or it's through love. It's not part of science. Science doesn't care about morality, and that is something that really hit me hard in one of Richard Dawkins' books, where he said, you know, as much as these nice thoughts may make you feel good, science doesn't have anything to say about morality.
Right.
And so when we separate ourselves from each other, and when we separate what we are, which I think is which are spiritual beings, from our own creation, we necessarily alienate ourselves from other people and from the world. And it's deeply ingrained. Now, I don't think everybody falls for this.
Right.
But I do think that when we start going down this path of, well, we need to be better people, we need to find common issues among people, we need to rise to a better world, all of that is typically beside the scientific worldview. I'm saying we got to take down the scientific worldview, and we need to build a united worldview in its place, which encompasses spirituality and science.
Well, that is just so well said. I want to thank you for that, because, as you say, when we put that mind out of the picture and just look at the matter, we take ourselves out. It also explains the separation of us from the environment and what happens to the environment
right.
when we do that.
Right.
It describes racism.
Right.
It describes how we can say we matter and those people don't. When we look at it in this kind of framework.
Right.
So that's very helpful. And from what you are, you know, sharing, yes, it does sound as though science is sort of taking some, you know, like sort of stabs at dipping into the area where you have, you know, where you have reached. And first going into dark matter and then dark energy. It seems like they're sort of bit by bit getting toward the mind. I don't know if science will call it that one day, but it does seem that it's heading there. But in the meantime, it appears that perhaps you're suggesting all these scientific principles, if perhaps not incorrect, are at least incomplete.
Well, I think it's very important to separate the practice of science from the content of science. And this is something that we don't normally do. Nobody is disagreeing, including me, with the scientific method, which is hypothesis, experiment, test, test the hypothesis. If it proves true, then maybe it becomes a theory. And if the theory continues to prove true, then maybe it becomes a fact. Nobody is disputing that the scientific method is not the best way to find truth. But when we say science, we typically mean the scientific method applied in the model of materialism. Okay? And so what I'm saying is that we need to apply the scientific model in a, the scientific method in a dream model. That's how you combine science and spirituality.
Hmm.
Now, for example, just to sort of, I mean, you asked the question about what's wrong with some of these scientific principles. One of the biggest sort of unknown features of our modern scientific worldview right now is that science is having a real hard time with the fine-tuning of the universe, with the fine-tuning of the constants and values that make up the energy and particles of the universe. Everything fits together, indeed, like a clock,
right.
A Swiss time piece. Science is having a very hard time with this, which is why the multiverse has come up, and why some other theories are now in vogue, like string theory, for example.
Right.
But the fine-tuning problem shows, in my mind, that there's obviously an intelligence behind the scenes. There's obviously a mind behind the scenes. And so the question, I think, is how long is it going to be before science realizes they could be scientists, they could be logical, they could be rigorous, they could be empirical, and still have mind in their theories.
Mm, that is a terrific point of view. I want to thank you for that. It also brings to my mind that we've had trouble fine-tuning our calendar. We need a leap year to do that fine-tuning. So there's a bit of mystery out there, and it's interesting to me that science has proven that, you know, itself that as humans we can only really perceive about 10% of what's there. So we know that we're operating with some limited perception here, and perhaps there's nothing wrong with that. Perhaps it's part of the mystery as it unfolds. We're about halfway through the program now. I'm really enjoying this conversation, and when we return, I'd like to get a little bit more into the role of religion in relation to science. All right, Philip, as
sure.
We get more into your book, too.
Sure. Thank you.
You are listening to the Godspeed Institute live on the Progressive Radio Network. When we return from the break, we will enter the conversation of religion and spirituality in relation to science with Philip Merriton, author of the book, The Heaven at the End of Science. Let's spend a couple of minutes now with an old favorite. Stay with us.
On the road of experience, I'm trying to find my own way. Sometimes I wish that I could fly away. When I think that I'm moving, suddenly things stand still. I'm afraid 'cause I think they always will. And I'm looking for space. Find out who I am, and I'm looking to know and understand. It's a sweet, sweet dream. Sometimes all alone in the universe. Oh, sometimes that's how it seems. I get lost in the sadness and the screams. I look in the center, and suddenly everything's clear. I find myself in the sunshine and my dreams, yes, and I'm looking for space.
Welcome back to the Godspeed Institute. You are live with CARE, and that was John Denver and Looking for Space. I love the lyric. It's a sweet, sweet dream. And we're talking about dreams today, Dream of Creation and Science, with Philip Mariton, author of the book The Heaven at the End of Science. Philip, in this part of the program, I'd like to explore a little more of that primeval spiritual nature of the human being that seems to be running parallel, from what we can tell, with our understanding of the material world. Can you share a little bit, what is the role of religion in relation to science from your point of view?
Well, I think that from one perspective, science and religion both seek truth, but of course they approach it from different angles. And I think that, as we said earlier, I think science is always the hardcore empirical testing, real-world experience, sort of the mechanic, where religion, to me, is a reflection of the undeniable inner urge for people for something better. There is a thought of a higher power in all of us. And we could call it by all sorts of names, we know that. And I think that science, as it's practiced today, almost makes religion inevitable, because science does not satisfy the spiritual needs of people. Now, that doesn't mean to say that religion itself doesn't need to evolve, because I also think that religion ultimately turns into spirituality and then becomes part of a united mindset, like we said earlier. There should be one way to view this amazing cosmos we live in. We shouldn't have to go to a science building for one perspective or another one.
Right, or put on combat boots to talk about it.
right. I mean, so ultimately, and I think that's why so many people are moving towards sort of maybe a personal spirituality or away from the orthodox religious teachings, or maybe interpreting them in their own way, reading the Bible for themselves, for example, or the Koran.
Right.
So in summary, I think religion is undeniably necessary when we have a scientific worldview based only about mindless stuff that offers virtually no hope for the future.
But Philip, even in science, it's acknowledged that life struggles toward something, not only the struggle for survival, but in biology, but that there is an evolving, whether it's of creatures or of mind, that there is a struggle in basic life, and I think that is acknowledged, and there's an integrity about that, no matter what the living creature is that might be observed. So when I hear you speaking, for me, the energy that's trying to be identified out there, whether it's dark energy or whatever, might be spirit, or might be called love, and that perhaps is where the spirituality comes in, as not something distinct or outside, but that's something that is built in, helping this material world along in its struggle. Would you say that's in the ballpark?
Well, in the worldview that I argue for in The Heaven at the End of Science, we don't need dark matter and we don't need dark energy. See, both dark matter and dark energy are assumptions that modern science has made to fill in gaps in their theories. And so I view the cosmos as a reflection of spirit. I think it was Emerson who said that nature is a metaphor of the human mind. And Schelling said that nature is the mind made visible. If you adopt this perspective, and maybe it takes a while, you start seeing us living in an enchanted cosmos. It's a story that we're telling to ourselves. Okay? And so we could say that all this energy, but the energy is coming from our internal intense desire to be something, to live, to enjoy the miracle of creation. The one thing I would say about evolution, and I would go halfway with you, Darwinian evolution does not have any direction. It has no goal. It is true, it's a struggle for survival, but that's it. See, and I think that most of us, well, just speaking for myself, I think that's wrong. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that things have gotten better over time in terms of the evolution of living things. In my view, evolution still occurs, but we do evolve to something better. We write a better story. We improve upon ourselves.
And can you share a little more about that? Because we're getting, I think it sounds like you're getting more into the area of purpose. For example,
right.
You were mentioning taking care of each other or
right.
compassion.
Right.
That can you share a little more about that?
Well, one of the necessary consequences of this worldview that I'm advocating, and I call it the real dream worldview in the book, you could call it the dream worldview or idealism, is that we are connected at the core of being. For example, when Jesus Christ said to treat each other as brothers, it wasn't just a nice thought. I'm saying it's a scientific truth.
Okay.
We are brothers and sisters. And the same thing before the Buddha, when he said, as you are is as you thought, or Confucius, who said something like, you know, when there's peace at home, there'll be peace in the earth. It's what I'm trying to say, and is that if we get maybe honest with ourselves, or take a different perspective at least, and we start seeing the world as a reflection of ourselves, we start putting morality and love on the same par as the law of gravity. And I'm saying that cannot be a bad thing.
Right, right. And perhaps in the East, the cause of law of, you know, cause and effect. Comes to mind and plays into this, and you know, Jesus is an interesting person to refer to. He's often been called like the Way. The original Christians were called the Way,
right.
Or followers of the Way. And I find death and resurrection the way of creation, and cosmology in my work has supported that.
Yeah.
So for me, this is built into the fabric of the universe, of this universe.
Yes.
Now, of course, there might be others,
well,
and they're ruled by some different things.
Right.
But for me, this call that I was talking about earlier and our resistance to it, it's just as scientific for me that we need to change and that we're being called upon to change.
Right.
Our systems cause pain. In different ways, and whatever our need has been to create those systems, I think is the same need that's prevented people from, you know, from allowing themselves to be part of that that world view you were mentioning in the beginning. That we take ourselves out of that picture for some reason. Perhaps it's ego based. That, you know, to just be part of creation and the unity of it in some sense makes us disappear as individuals.
Mm.
But that may be the truth underlying things, is that we are one. And perhaps all our individuality is an illusion that's driving us in this world, and particularly in materialistic goals. So
yeah.
Now, if I could ask you then, what is the true role then of spirit in matter, what you call mind? How would you say that in your book or in your studies that how it operates?
Well, as I'm saying, I mean, I think that the world is a dream of God, and therefore it's a projection. It's an illusion. But we are part of the same world. We are spirits in a spiritual world. You know, that old police song.
Yeah, spirits in the material world.
In the material world. And
yeah.
There was a George Harrison, Living in a Material World. And we could probably go on and on. There's probably some other pop singers out there that had the same thing. But the police had that song because, you know, it's a struggle. We're spirits in a material world. We can't find happiness in this material world. At least that's the message I got from that. What I'm saying is that we are spirits in a spiritual world. That's why the world is real to us. And that's something we just haven't appreciated. We tend to think that we, even if someone would go as far as to say, okay, well, I've had a lucid dream before, or I had an amazing hallucination, and yes, that would seem real to me, and I could see how the world might be a dream, they still want to view themselves as some kind of machine, perhaps.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is just give up, just give that up. It doesn't mean anything. The world does not change at all. What happens is that we realize that we are part of a miracle in motion, a dream in process. We're thrown out into nothing, and we become many because being the only one is a lonely existence.
Yes.
We need each other.
Yes, we do.
We need each other. And so the, you know, I know that there's a lot of books out there that are very good and a lot of good teachings that talk about spirituality and compassion, and all this is great, but what I'm saying is that we need to deepen the analysis and realize that the truth of spirituality is deeper than the truth of the modern scientific theories.
Yes.
Where maybe I get a little radical, but this is why my book took so long to write. Because I knew I was saying something radical, but I wanted to support it with the best argument I could put together at the time to say, folks, you may think this is radical, but hang in there with me and read it through. Because if you have your choice between being a creature that could be a potential God on earth in a heaven on earth, would you rather play that role? Or do you want to be somebody that sort of starts falling apart at 50 or 60 years old and slides away into the grave in a universe that's going to blow up in a couple billion years?
Hmm.
I mean,
that's a very different point of view.
Right, right. And I'm saying if we have a chance for option A, then let's go for it.
Hmm.
Because nothing is preventing us from being better and bigger people than we currently are.
Yes, and I hear what you're saying about actually compassion perhaps being just as empirical a law of nature as anything we might be studying in a lab.
Right.
And we're heading toward perhaps the revelation of that, that it's not just a personal trait to develop in your spare time, but actually we are united with this spirit, this mind,
right,
that calls for us to, as you said, take care of each other and be better people and opt away from this world of matter for something better.
Right.
Now, do you think, as mind goes, is this consciousness developing basically kind of a one person at a time basis, like one heart at a time, where people choose to not focus on the material and to choose instead the more selfless purposes that help to bring us all forward?
Well, that could be the case. I think the most interesting way to look at this, or one interesting way, is the concept of critical mass. You know, on my own radio show, I interview a lot of people in the same area. Now, I also interview scientists and philosophers, in addition to spiritualists or New Agers. But it's amazing to me how many people think and believe that the days of materialism are coming to an end.
Right.
And the question is, what will it take? Mm. And when does this critical mass form such that it becomes unstoppable? And the nice thing is that if this is correct, then our consciousness, our awareness, our maturity will naturally develop in that direction. There isn't really, yes, we could accelerate it, we could write books, we could meditate, we could have conversations like this, we could read all sorts of other books, and we could accelerate it, which is, I think, sounds like a good idea to me, but if it's true, it's going to happen.
Right.
And maybe it is one person at a time, and then the dam breaks.
Yes, no, I agree with you, and you know what we were discussing earlier. I'm not sure we have much of a choice. I think we're looking at things. This is a very interesting time,
right?
To be living in, where you know we can. What's different now is, I mean, perhaps these things have happened, you know, for across all ages, but right now, because of our abilities to communicate with each other as we are right now and online as we do and around the world, we're sort of in this together. So we all watch, you know, economies collapse across the world together, and we all watch what's happening with the environment, and we all feel perhaps concerned about our kids' future. And we're just in this moment where we're all watching this together and are experiencing a kind of connection I don't think that has been possible before, and, you know, in part as a gift of science and technology, but with that meaning puzzle, you know, where we are reaching out to each other, are speaking with each other, are going through this together, has right there in it what your argument is. That it's about people, and it's about caring and connection, almost together as one mind, you know, on the internet even.
Right, right. And I have to say that I completely agree with you that the internet and the open access to information, to new ideas, to new civilizations, is really helping the cause, because I think the number one impediment to building a better world is closed minds, is structured belief systems, are people that are raised in cultures where they're taught not to question authority or question ideas. And if we see something, you know, in the Arab Spring, democracy in other countries where people are, young people are wanting a voice, they're asking questions, they're raising their hands, they're not accepting the inbred cultural beliefs that put them down. And this to me is the number one advantage of the internet and just the openness of information. Because if we open minds to new ideas, then we have people who think through these things, who maybe look at religion, read the Bible for themselves, as we said, start reading about the history of different cultures, start reaching understanding instead of categorizing other people as enemies. And so it really is a great benefit of the modern technological revolution we've seen.
Yes.
I just wish people would spend a little bit more time reading some more thoughtful books. But there are, I mean, you've written.
Well, ours are available.
Yeah, there are. Yeah, that's true. there are quite a few books. I mean, there's all sorts of books, and there's some great books, bestsellers that are on these same themes,
right,
that are opening doors. So
right.
I don't mean to say that it's hopeless.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah.
No, and, you know, all the books aside, you and I also know that, you know, what someone needs to do is stand outside, feel the sun on their face,
right,
and go inside. And, you know, I like to help folks realize that answer is inside them, as it sounds like you do, too.
Right.
And that we all share that, whatever that light is, whatever that common spirit is. Perhaps we've gone off track, and materialism became very important to us. Perhaps it wasn't always, and perhaps it isn't everywhere in the world. There are still societies that live very differently,
right,
than we do in the West. But it seems to me our struggle is, in that moment that we know what greed does, and we see it. We all talk about Wall Street. We all talk about bailouts and rewards for, you know, misdeeds. I mean,
right. We
know this, and we see the fallout. And, you know, I guess when you talk about critical mass is, you know, when does that internal switch go on?
Right.
And then, you know, perhaps it's one by one. Perhaps, like you said, the dam breaks. Or perhaps, as a lot of movies suggest, something comes from the outside that suddenly unites us.
Right. It's going to be interesting, and the beauty is that it's an experiment taking place in real time. It's really happening, and maybe the experiment fails. I mean, at the end of my book, I say, well, maybe this whole thing is wrong, and maybe this experiment that the world is really a dream or really God, and we're moving to a higher place, maybe it's wrong. But on the other hand, if it's right, then the sky is the limit.
Yes.
And there just is no reason not to place some bets on it. And in fact, you know, I've gone all in because I have spent so much time with it. But I just think that the change is going to come, and it's just a matter of time. I also think that part of this is the thought leaders, and this need to change their minds. We need to change the thought leaders, and by these people I mean the people that write the textbooks, that get the Nobel Prizes.
Yeah. Because
they really can't have a new worldview, a new science, when all the textbook writers are teaching the other thing. Now, fortunately, there's a lot of modern scientists that are going in this direction, and it's not as if it's some kind of wayward,
right,
you know, singular thought out there of me or a couple other people.
There are hundreds
of people.
There are some classic books that have been written on this subject for some decades now, including, for example, The Tao of Physics.
Right.
That, you know, began, well, it's a very popular book, actually.
Right.
That's, you know, had this conversation that the deeper you get into particle physics, the more you find yourself in Asian philosophy.
You know,
which is wonderful. The dance of the universe, the dance of particles and atoms, that nothing perhaps is solid.
Right.
I find is great. Perhaps the folks who have the need to nail things down might be uncomfortable with that, but that if all of life is moving and dancing and changeable and malleable, and I find that very inspiring. Now, as we get towards the end of the program, part of your book is includes the goal to offer hope, and I'd like to, if you could head toward that, towards the end of the program, about science, religion, hope, and what your perception, how it might be so helpful to people.
Well, I don't accept the view that there is not a goal to the universe, that we're nothing but evolved amoeba, that the universe is going to wind down, and that there's going to be some cataclysmic, you know, a war that's going to destroy the Earth or some other terrible event. I don't subscribe to that, and I've never have. Inside of me, as I said before, there is something that knows, that wants, that desires a better world. And that, to me, it's a question of letting yourself tell your own story.
Hmm.
Tell what story would you write for yourself? If you had to write the screenplay, what would you write? And I'm saying that if we view the world as a reflection of ourselves, as part of our own creativity, a united dream, not just a singular dream, then we're going to want to write the best story possible. In other words, something so that there's something in it for everybody. We all get on the boat, okay? And so the hope is in the title, because I wanted to write something optimistic. I wanted to say, folks, this is not just happy talk. What I'm saying is that if we take down the edifice of materialism and we build this spiritual world in its place, we have everything we had before, but now we have unlimited vision and unlimited chance for fulfillment.
Mm.
And so in many ways, you know, I'm trying to make hope real.
Yeah.
Trying to make it something, not just, never, we're all taught don't give up hope, right? Because if you give up hope, you've got nothing left.
Right.
And so I think that is fundamental, but I wanted to give a basis for that, which is that write your own story. Don't let somebody tell you that you're going to be limited, that you're going to die in the end. You know, mm. be a hero in your own story.
Mm. That's fantastic. Philip, as we come to the end of the program, I just want to let listeners know that your website and contact information and book information will be posted on our homepage shortly at GodspeedInstitute.com. I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. It's been a joy speaking with you.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Kara. It's been a pleasure, and I really enjoyed our little talk here.
Oh, thank you, okay. And best of luck.
Thank you.
And listeners, thank you for joining us for the Godspeed Institute today. This program was recorded live on the Progressive Radio Network in New York City and produced by Michael Hallenbeck. The Godspeed Institute is an independent educational organization dedicated to promoting religious tolerance and celebrating the value of spiritually based living. If you would like to hear this or any of our previous programs again, or send it to someone, simply go to GodspeedInstitute.com. Everyone has access, and all our programs are free of charge. Please send your comments to office@GodspeedInstitute.com. We always enjoy hearing from you. And join us again as we continue to explore all the world's religions and spiritual belief systems. Until then, we wish you Godspeed on your journey.